And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 6 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 17th of January. How are you all keeping out there? It is a wintry one across the Northwest. It arrived, albeit a day late, it might seem, and difficult driving conditions out there. That being said, though, a big shout out to the lads and lassies, I'm not sure of the makeup of them, gritting the roads early this morning. I know some of you out there, maybe your road's not gritted and you would like it to be gritted. It's not their fault. They're given a set route and they were out at the crack of the dawn. Some of the first vehicles across some really nasty conditions and left most of the routes safe and passable with care. Those are the gritted routes, of course. The back roads, not so much so. But anyway, we are here to warm the cockles of your heart if we can't warm... atmosphere and the roads. We want you involved in the conversation throughout the course of the morning with the usual numbers. I'll give them to you again. I know maybe sometimes you listen regularly and you're like, oh, I know the number. But not everyone does, and we have new people, thankfully, tuning in all the time. WhatsApps and text to 086 60 25 000. If you're outside the Republic, it's 00353 86 60 25 000. You can give us a call on 07491 25 000, 07491 25 000, or email comments at highlandradio.com. And maybe you do have a home day today. Maybe the school was closed or you had to take off work or you didn't go or you just work from home, whatever it might be. You can watch us on your telly, on your smart TV. Most smart TVs now, or most TVs now sold, are smart. They have YouTube on. Pop it open, stick in Highland Radio Ireland and watch us live. We're also on your Fire Stick as well through your YouTube app or your Google TV, whichever it may be. You can take us with us on that on your mobile devices. And we're also on Highland Hub and Highland News and Sport on Facebook. Right, let's look at the front pages this morning. The Finn Valley Voice, signs will be erected at the high visibility crossings in Ballybuffet and Stranola before the end of March 24. That's what they're actually officially called, high visibility crossings. I can't see them at night time, hardly at all. But anyway, the crossings will also be relined with high reflectivity paint. Wow, this is amazing stuff. It should have been done from the beginning. Councillor Patrick McGowan welcomed the long-awaited response from Transport Infrastructure Ireland. We'll be speaking to Councillor McGowan earlier on. From the get-go, it was clear. As soon as they went in, as soon as they went on, so many of you out there today says, you can't see them. You don't know they're there. They're not safe. And now here we are. Thankfully, I don't think anyone's been seriously injured. But thanks, here we are in the next year. And the right thing seemingly is going to be done. We'll tease that out a little later on in the programme. Why do the wheels move so slowly? The Inish Times tells us that two men have been arrested following a spate of incidents, including the hijacking of a car in Bridgend on Sunday night. Two men in their 20s were arrested in the Dublin area after Gardaí located a grey Seat Altea with a Northern Ireland Reg, which was hijacked in Bridgend at around 8:30 p.m. on Sunday. Buncrana Garda Superintendent Sean Grant said the two males were found with the hijacked car and were arrested on suspicion of possession of offensive weapons. That car has been recovered and two males have been arrested and remain in Garda custody in a Dublin city station, he said yesterday. The Donegal Post this morning. Isolation, loneliness and lack of proper access to a multitude of services is adding even more pressure to elderly people's housing concerns in rural areas, according to a Donegal councillor. And by integrating them into bigger town and village populations, this in turn could free up large houses in rural areas that could be utilised by younger families currently on an ever-expanding housing list. This is according to Councillor Niamh Kennedy. During a discussion in relation to the ongoing housing crisis at the January meeting of the Municipal District of Donegal, Councillor Kennedy pointed out that it was also important to bear in mind the ongoing plight of many of the MD's elderly population when it comes to the county's housing policy for the future. On to the Nationals now, and the issue of immigration dominating all of the papers, so very hard to avoid it. If you're sick listening about it, my apologies, but as I say, it's either that or just dump the papers. The government is to consider... This is a bizarre situation down in Ross Cray. Now, I'm not saying whether it's the right policy or the wrong policy. I'm just giving my... Why are the headphones not working correctly? I'm just giving my initial reaction. There's no hotels left in Ross Cray because the last hotel that was there ceased trading as a hotel just this month. And instead, it's being converted into accommodation for asylum seekers. Now, the government has decided to buy another hotel. The government's getting into the hotel business. It's going to buy another hotel in Roscrea that's derelict or hasn't been in operational for a while, do it up and run it as a community hotel. So the hotel that was there has been taken over by the government, and now they're going to, which I don't know how it works. I presume they're just going to put it over onto the council, North Tip Council. They're going to take over a rundown hotel, do that up, and provide a community hotel for the Roscrea area. I've never heard the likes of it before. I don't know if it's right or wrong, but it's just random. Well, the government is to consider buying a hotel in Roscrea for use as a community, for use in community functions after local protests over asylum seekers being housed in another hotel in the Tipperary town. Fianna Fáil TD Jackie Cahill said he had received buy-in for the proposal from government leaders after he had a meeting with Integration Minister Roderick O'Gorman. The Taoiseach and Tánaiste have said they are open to examining what funds could be used. The Taoiseach and the Tánaiste have said they are open to examining what funds could be used to buy Grant's Hotel in the centre of the town to run as a community facility for functions, Mr Cahill said. He said buying the hotel, which is for sale and currently not in use, could help appease local anxiety over asylum seekers being moved into the Racket Hall Inn Hotel. Now, I presume a lot of the anxieties are to do with the availability of services, dental, GP, hospital, jobs and what have you. But the plan is to buy another hotel, do it up, and the government would sort of be running a hotel for the community. Yet they've taken over the hotel that was functioning as a hotel and used it for asylum seekers. As I say, maybe it's the best idea in the world. It just feels a little bit like, not a joke, but a strange way of approaching things. The Irish Times tells us that 10 areas in Ireland, presumably Donegal, under the most pressure due to the arrival of refugees and asylum seekers, will be provided with a special package of supports that could see extra resources given for health, education and policing. Now, this is to be welcomed, I presume. Donegal, what this package would be, how it would be administered, who's going to administer it, what would these extra resources in health, education and policing look like? There are those who might say, look, we have one child and adolescent counselling service in Donegal. That's set to close unless something changes very quickly. That is set to close in the next month or so. Can we have faith that we are actually going to receive, if that can't be funded, are we going to have faith that a package of supports will come to Donegal for extra resources such as health, education and policing? How does that look? What does extra money for policing look like? Does that mean more guards are coming here? What does extra money for education look like? Is that another school? More teachers? What in terms of health? More money? Are they going to pay the what's currently there more money? Or how are they going to attract more GPs? And again, I'd be very interested to see how this actually works in reality. Amid concern within government about the increasing number of protests outside buildings due to be used to accommodate asylum seekers and refugees, all government departments have been asked to compile a list of what extra supports could be given to the 10 districts with the highest number of refugees and asylum seekers arrivals. The work is being led by the Department of Taoiseach and is at a very, very early stage, with ministers discussing the plans at a cabinet meeting yesterday. Again, I can't see how this doesn't look like a problem that chucking money at would fix, because I think the solutions are more long-term. So also we'll be very interested to see how that will progress. Last story in relation to this. It's on the front page of the Irish Daily Mail. The government fears a revolt by county councils over the country's immigration policy, that it could become contagious ahead of the forthcoming local elections. It is going to become contagious or divisive or the top topic. There's no doubt about that. This after Mayo County Council passed a motion yesterday calling on its staff to cease working with Minister Roderick O'Gorman's Department of Integration until an agreed strategy is put in place on housing refugees. Now, it is a motion that is passed, which sends out its own message, whether you agree with it or not. The stuff that they're talking about are executive functions, so it's up to the executive of the council. So some might say or feel that maybe these councillors have chucked the executive under the bus, really, because they're going to have to go against the will of the council and the people to continue to engage with Minister Roderick O'Gorman. But anyway, it's probably not the first. Certainly it is the first, but not the last time we're going to see such motions, I would say. I would be interested to see who might propose that up here. Although non-binding, the motion passed unanimously with the support of Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil councillors and is designed to protest the government's handling of the issue. The Irish Daily Mail understands that similar motions are being considered by county councils in Kerry, Galway and Donegal. So if you are the, are you the local authority member? Apparently there is one in Donegal that's going to be proposing this motion or would support such a motion. Let us know. We'd love to speak to you. As I say, I'm just running through the councillors in my head and I'm just, it's very hard on the hoof, but do you know the councillor that is likely to make that proposal? I wonder would it pass up here. On to the international stage now. The Irish Daily Star: Iran and America are edging towards open warfare as the Middle East crisis threatens to explode into all-out conflict between East and West, intelligence experts warned, as if things aren't bad enough. Tehran's Monday missile attack on Iraq, which came close to hitting US consulate buildings, has put an Iran and the United States inching closer to open warfare. And it claims Tehran's support for terror proxies in the Middle East has led to it blocking US efforts to stop Israel's war on Hamas from exploding into a wider conflict. And more so than Iran has proxies, the West has proxies as well, of course. So whether they fight directly, certainly often they fight indirectly. More sports could be available on free-to-air channels. This according to the Irish Daily Mirror. Top sporting events could be made mandatory free-to-air as part of a new review. The GAA provincial finals, All-Ireland quarterfinals and All-Ireland semis, the new UEFA National League and all Six Nations games are among 14 sporting events which may be in the running. Tánaiste Mícheál Martin said the review of the list of free-to-air events provides an opportunity to ensure that our most memorable sporting moments are retained on national TV for the people of Ireland to view together on an equal basis. And also, Mícheál Martin has been commenting on proposals to change Páirc Uí Chaoimh to Super Value Park. He said he wouldn't be in favour of that. It turns out it's not going to happen in the short term anyway. Those plans seem to have been put on hold. But it's just kind of interesting sometimes, I think, and this is not anti-Mícheál Martin or anti-anyone for that matter, just an observation that, you know, still really struggling to get any commentary as it relates to the potential of us losing our child and adolescent council services, yet people opine and have commentary on a football ground getting a different name. It's just interesting. And as I say, we're continuing to try and get answers in relation to that issue of just reference. And finally, moobs. Man boobs. Well, man boobs are a sign fellas are heading for an early grave, it's emerged. Men with enlarged breast tissue were found to be more than a third more likely to die before the age of 75 than those not affected. And for those whose moobs were linked to a known risk factor, including being obese, the chance of dying early rose by three quarters. Researcher Dr. Elvira Brauner said, hopefully the findings stimulate more awareness among healthcare providers to apply interventions alleviating underlying factors. So if you've got boobs, man boobs, moobs, there is an increased risk according to that one piece of research of you dying before your time. Okay. There's a whole host of elections coming up this year. Referendi, European elections, Gaeltacht elections, local elections. There could even be a general election. And one of the familiar sights around election times are election posters. They pop up all over the place. And some would see them as a critical way of getting your face out there. Others see them as pure litter. Then there's issues with them coming down, when they come down, the old plastic ties that can end up lying around the place and the impact they have on the environment. So we thought we'd have a wee chat about that maybe in 2024. Is it time with Facebook X and everything else to go digital and do away with the old school posters on the polls and what have you? A few guests to talk about this. Michael McLaughlin, Branch Secretary of the Donegal Labour Party, is with us. Good morning to you, Michael.
Good morning, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, Michael. Okay, so what's your position in relation to election posters?
My position is a personal one. I think that the day has come for them. When we look at the environmental impact and the plastic that they're made of in a world where we're talking about cutting down our plastic use, I think it's time for them to go.
The only way it works, though, is if they all go. You know what I mean? It would be like you can't expect a Labour Party or Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael on their own to take a stand and do that, because it would leave their candidates at a disadvantage, arguably. So this would be something that would have to be agreed, would it not, you know, across the political spectrum?
I think, yes, in answer to your question, it potentially does leave candidates at a disadvantage. I mean, there's lots of talk and study around it that it leaves new and unknown candidates. And I suppose potentially I could have some skin in the game in that one. I've let my name go forward to the selection convention.
Good stuff.
And with that, I have decided that I will not be using election posters should I be selected to contest the local election, regardless of whether it's going to leave me at a disadvantage or not. I know there are arguments about turnout, and general sort of making the locals or people aware, the electorate aware that there's an election going on. But I think in the context of everything else that we have going on, I think that there is enough information around, or certainly we have enough tools available to get to the electorate and to get messages across. You're right that it should be a blanket thing. I'm not sure I see that happening. So then you have to come into the notion of personal choice.
But what we do have from time to time is areas that will say, look, we have a very active Tidy Towns area. We're asking you not to put up posters within, I think it's town boundaries sometimes is the terminology that's used. What happens is the politicians have to respect that, because there becomes sort of a toxicity to ignoring it. So we do see banning or sort of compliance on a local level from time to time.
I think there are something like 150 areas in Ireland that have them banned. And I know that the larger cities, so Dublin, Galway, Cork, all have them. I mean, I was reading a study that said there was a 3% less turnout in some areas of Cork at the last election because of a lack of posters. That came with a caveat that it's a very small study and hard to know. But yeah, those areas do exist. You know, I think that the amount of election posters, and you think of how busy this year is going to be in terms of elections, I think we could be potentially looking at quite a number, and I think that that's not necessarily something that I want to be looking at personally.
No, and then we see them. Sometimes they're too low. Sometimes they're hanging off. They're defaced. I would imagine that, particularly given the sort of atmosphere we're in this country, there could be a lot of defacing of posters. They're going to have to be placed up very high. I just think we're advancing politically. I don't have a view on whether this should be up or down or not. Doesn't put me up or down, but I can see the arguments both one way or other. Brendan Byrne, of course, a former elected representative, joins us on the programme now. Good morning, Brendan.
Good morning, Greg.
Great to have you on the show. What is your view, Brendan? You would take a different position, would you, to Michael?
Well, in fairness, I think postering is part of the fabric of Irish electioneering since the foundation of the state. That being said, the importance of postering has changed over the last 30 to 40 years particularly. But it's a more complex issue than just banning them. It's not black and white. I think, in fairness, for new candidates particularly, for smaller parties and for independents, if we ban postering, we're putting it at a non-fair disadvantage, and it's disproportionate. There is a role, particularly in local elections and indeed in European elections, for postering, because the connectivity between new candidates and the electorate depends more on the visual presence of them in the election period. So I think to put a blanket ban on postering would be completely unfair to new entrants into elections and the new candidates. I think we're conflating the argument here. Is there an argument about the level of postering or the location of postering as opposed to postering itself? But I would be very clear, if you ban postering, it's a major advantage to the larger parties, to the better-known candidates, and to the sitting candidates, and that can't be tolerated in a democracy.
Well, we have Michael McLaughlin here. He's the Branch Secretary of the Labour Party. He's put himself forward for nomination, and we wish him success in that regard. He's from a smaller party, a very small footprint, it has to be said, in Donegal at this time. A first-time candidate, Michael, if I'm correct, is that
correct,
right?
Yeah.
And he himself is choosing to say, you know, I'm going to take a moral stance here, and I'm not going to put up posters. So you're... argument is being counter-argued by one of the very people that you say might benefit most from postering, if that makes sense, Brendan.
Yeah, and I have listened closely to what Michael has said, and it is an honourable position. He's taken the position that he's not going to put up posters. I personally think that's unwise. Someone that has commented on elections like myself for the last 25 years, particularly in a local election where your name recognition is critical, the face recognition is critical over that short period of electioneering. And I have seen in my lifetime many candidates take a similar view, and after the election, post-election, they regretted it. You have a very short window of opportunity to sell yourself to the electorate, and face recognition, name recognition is critical in that in a local election.
Obviously, Michael, we'd all respect what Brendan's saying, but I mean, there are ways to counteract that. You might say, right, okay, but I'm going to go absolutely nuts on social media and try and get in every newspaper and get on Highland Radio and what have you, and I'll try and offset the valid point that Brendan's making in a modern era in a modern way. Is that, I'm not putting words in your mouth, just asking.
No. Well, I think that's more or less what I said earlier, but there's a second point to that as well, that as a candidate for a smaller party, we don't have the budget to plaster a town in posters anyway. So regardless of whether I said I was going to do it or not, I'd still be at a disadvantage because I'm not going to be able to put up the same number of posters as other parties regardless.
Do you think that we're going to see more defacing of posters, more damage to posters in these elections, Brendan, than we might have seen in the past? Because some people who are opposed to government parties or opposition parties and their position on certain issues might see it as a way of protest.
Look, since the foundation of the state, we've had defacing of posters, and I suppose it's part of the semantics around electioneering. It happens at every election. Is it more common now than previous? Possibly it is, but it's part and parcel of electioneering. I think there's another critical point that we need to make about posturing. Posturing actually is a very strong employer, and if you look around Letterkenny, there's 2 to 3 companies that depend on elections for posturing and the manufacture posters. So there's an employment element to it as well. And in terms of plastering towns with posters, I think that day is long gone. We have restrictions under the 2001 Election Act on election spending and such things as that. So I think that's a null point, to be fair.
Yeah, but the positioning of posters is very, very important. I've seen, Brendan, I've seen members of the same party, candidates of the same party, in fisticuffs, in literal fisticuffs, arguing about getting a poster at a certain junction. We don't want to see that.
Isn't it great to see such passion that posters can instill that degree of vibrancy in an election? And that's what's needed, particularly at a time when participation in election is declining.
Do you know what would be interesting, though, Michael, and it could be used throughout the course of the year, is, say, for instance, in your approach to Letterkenny or your Ballybuffet or Buncrana or wherever it might be, if we had a digital poster, right, one digital poster with all the candidates on it that it could rotate amongst them. You know what I mean? That would be the compromise. You get all the eyes when people are sitting in traffic or whatever. It scrolls through. You know, I mean, this is real modern stuff I'm talking here. It will never happen, Michael, but, you know, that could be a compromise here. Brendan's probably listening going, that fella's lost the plot here. But listen.
No, strangely enough, that actually happened in some European...
Given the steps of traffic on the way into Letterkenny, yeah. I think we can get through as many candidates as we'd want to. I think that there are many options that we could explore and look at. I think, you know, the notion of technology is something, a resource that's underutilized at the moment in electioneering, I think.
Yeah. In relation to the environmental argument, some say, Michael, some are saying, look, some of them are made from recyclable materials and they're often reused and what have you. But listen, that's your stance and that's the point you'll be able to make on the doorstep, and it'll probably, you know, resonate with people. So there are advantages and disadvantages. You were saying the digital poster is already employed, so there's no point me going on Dragon's Den, Brendan. That's already happening elsewhere, is it?
It happens in Europe. Look, there's this misnomer that Ireland's the last country in the world with posturing. That's not factual. I've travelled many countries at election time, and posturing is very central in Spain and in Italy. I've seen in Belgium recently, they have electronic posters just like what you would outline. It's in the urban areas, and they flip from one candidate to the other. I'd be a bit fearful of that because obviously there would be a cost. Companies provide that service. Yeah. So So in terms of where we are as a country, we have a liberal enough law on posturing governed by the 2001 Act. There's issues in terms of where you can put posters in terms of safety of traffic of pedestrians. And within that also, within that act, you have to remove your posters within 7 days or you suffer the fine of 150 euros per poster. So we're reasonably regulated, but I would hate to think we would start curtailing posturing because it will curtail the freedom of democracy, particularly for new candidates entering into the race, and it'll disadvantage them. And we can't countenance that. We're an open democracy.
Charlie says candidates should have their posters in the shape of a dartboard. I'm not sure if that would be very useful. Brendan, your approach is kind of interesting in that you would say, and you're not, Michael will make up his own mind, but some people have thought they're doing the right thing and then regretted it because afterwards the disadvantage was clear to them.
Yes, not everyone is an election hack like myself or yourself. It's amazing when an election is called, the number within our communities that don't actually know an election is called. Mm. It's amazing the number of people that don't actually know who the candidates are until they see a face on a poster at the end of their drive or at the end of their road. So posturing still has a role to play. I'm not for 1 minute suggesting that it's as significant a role as it was 40 years ago, but it's still a role in the participation in democracy, and therefore it should be defended.
Okay, listen, brilliant stuff. Thank you very much indeed, Brendan. And finally, Michael, you know, things are changing all of the while. And since the last election, there's been huge advances in terms of social media and different ways of reaching people. I mean, TikTok was barely a thing during the last elections.
We have now celebrities that are funded totally on places like TikTok and Instagram and what have you, you know, so we certainly can reach people in different ways. Okay. And I suppose the other thing I would say is you have a choice in that. You don't have a choice about looking at a poster if you're driving or walking along the road, but you do have a choice whether you open something or whether it's sent to you or not.
Yeah, exactly. And listen, we don't know what the right or wrong is, and everyone can make their own decisions. And in the wider scale of things, it's not the most significant point, but it will be a topic over the next couple of months. Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate your time as well. All right, that's Michael McLaughlin, a prospective Labour candidate. He's the branch secretary of the Donegal Labour Party. And we also heard from former councillor Brendan Byrne, who is clearly of the view that you might be at a disadvantage if you didn't erect signage for the reasons he outlined. Let's have a little perspective, says this listener. Yes, posters are made from plastic and naturally there will be many. However many are reused, it also promotes democracy within the community now compared to the use of posters to how much plastic bottles of milk we use annually. We need a bit of common sense. That comes in from Darren in Buncrana. You could always make the posters out of biodegradable material, says a listener. Another, will the Green Party use election posters? I can't recall what the Green Party policy is in relation to that. And on it goes. All right, have you a view on it? As I say, it's not earth-shattering, but still, it's a little distraction from some of the more serious issues. And we'll be discussing those and other things as the morning wears on. John on Facebook, before just go to this break, says Donegal County Council actually banned them. But we do see, I wonder, any towns out there, any tidy towns committees out there taking a position on this early in the year? If you are, let us know. 086 60 25,000. Right, okay. There is an event coming up in Buncrana on the 25th of February. It's a night with the stars, and it's in St Mary's Hall in Buncrana, and it's a fitting venue for it because it is about putting some money into St Mary's Hall. We're joined by Maureen Tolley, who's director of A Night with the Stars, which, as I say, is on in St Mary's Hall, Buncrana, 25th of February. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, before we talk about the show, what work is it needs doing, or what will the funding from this go towards?
Right, well, St Mary's Hall is 100 years old, so it was built in 1904, so it's a very old building and it does need updating. It's a beautiful theatre and it's very authentic, but there is a fundraising committee there in place already, so that is set up. We're just going to donate
add
money
to
towards
that,
it
yeah.
to put in a lift. Yeah, just to put a lift in and then enhance the toilets and give disabled toilets and stuff, because at the minute there is no disabled access to the top floor of the theatre.
All right, so really important work for a hall that's an important part of the community for everyone, for lots of different reasons, I'm sure, Maureen, not just for great shows like this that's coming.
No, oh, definitely. I mean, St Mary's Hall would be the heart of Buncrana, Greg, to be honest. It is the hub of the town. It's, you know, it's not just a theatre. There's a community centre downstairs that's open and used every day by different groups, Zumba classes, exercise classes, mother and toddler groups. The local dance school uses it. There's meetings in it. There's bingo at the weekend. It's also then a cinema upstairs at the weekend. And then various shows throughout the year. The Pantomime Society use it. Grease Paint Productions use it. The local dance schools use it for their shows. Some amazing shows are in it. But it is, it's the heart of the town, and it's for every generation of the town, and we just want to make sure that it's going to be there for future generations.
A Night with the Stars takes place in February and into March. It's over a number of nights, actually. I mentioned just one night, but is it over a number of nights, Maureen?
It is. Yes, yes, Greg. We're running it for six shows. So it starts with a matinee on the Sunday, and then we're running Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. The bingo will go ahead as normal on the Friday, and then we finish on the Saturday night. So we're running for 6 days for six shows. Yeah.
Now, tell us about the show. It's a variety show. How would you describe it or frame it?
Yes, it is a variety show. So we're doing kind of like different little sketches of musicals, and then we're having solo acts, we're having dancers, we're having singers, we're having comedy. So there's every age group. It's a massive cast. Our youngest are 8 and our oldest are 60 plus.
And are these all members of the Inner Shown Theatre group, or are you having to invite others in as well, or what's the story, Maureen?
No, they're all members of the Inish Theatre Group. So we set up, 8 of us set up the Inish Theatre Group in September 2023. We'd been planning it for about 4 or 5 months before that. 8 like-minded people, friends that were all, we all got to know each other through the arts, being on stage in Buncrana over the years. And we just felt that it was time that the town was ready for something new and something that we could raise money as well. I mean, this year's going to be the lift. Hopefully, you know, in years to come, following year, like we're just getting started, Greg. It'll be donating to local charities, not just Buncrana, Inishowen. That's why we called it Inish Theatre. It was open to everybody in Inishowen. And when we put the word out there and we started to hold auditions, we were just, we were blown away by the amount of interest and the amount of people that came along.
But it also gives people who want to perform and have the talent a spotlight and a platform to
a
do
platform.
It. Yeah, exactly, which is great.
Definitely.
So there's going to be sections of Annie, Sister Act, Mamma Mia, and Grease, amongst others, as well as performances from Queen songs, Amy Winehouse, Beyonce. There's something for everyone there. It starts on the 25th of February with a matinee at 3 p.m. and then night shows at 8 p.m. on the 25th, 6th, 27th, 28th, 29th and into the 2nd of March.
Yes, exactly. So, and we're already selling tickets, and the tickets are actually selling very fast. So we're delighted with the response. And as I say, I'm only one person out of 8 in this group that set this up. We sat over many cups of tea and coffee talking about it. And it is a joint venture. There is a group of us.
And I think, too, it is obviously going into a very good fund to give it St. Mary's a proverbial lick of paint, but also to make it more accessible for people. Yeah. But also there's a great deal of time and effort goes into this too. So it's in supporting that as well and getting entertained in the process, isn't it, Maureen? Because a lot of people are dedicating awful lot of time to this this week of shows.
They are. They are a lot of time, voluntary. And, you know, what you see on the stage is amazing, but the backstage team that it takes as well, and people off the stage that are coming offering their services, it's a great community, you know, thing as well, and that shows great community spirit.
Right, so where can people get tickets? There's a box office number. Are they physically available for people in and around the area? And I'll mention the number, but just in, any physical outlets? Mm-hmm. Or are you just going completely sort of by phone?
No, Monday to Friday at the minute, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. over the phone, and people can pay over the phone as well or pay online, and then they can collect the tickets on a Wednesday or Thursday evening at the church hall from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. On a Sunday between 2 and 6 in St Mary's Hall. That's for now, Greg. And then from 2 weeks before the show, starting 2 weeks before the show, there will be somebody physically in St Mary's Hall every day as well from 12 to 2.
All right, the ticket box office number is 086-459-5016. That's operational 6 to 8 p.m.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. We'll retain that number here for anyone that wants it because they might know our number off the top of the head, off the top of their heads. Okay. We'll chat again and maybe get a performance from someone a little closer to the time, Maureen. But for now, an early reminder. Thank you very much for your time. We're joined on the programme now by Councillor Patrick McGowan. Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
As you would be well aware, the crossings in Ballybuffet, Stranoller, have proven somewhat controversial, some more than others. People complaining of a lack of visibility, not really clear who's got right of way, not really being able to see them at certain times of the day. What has the TEI come up with now, and why are they coming up with this now?
Yeah, well, look, since they have been in there now, about a year and a half, as you say, there's been quite a bit of controversy about it, and public reaction has been very, very, very negative. Now, some people are saying they're great. You have now locations that you can cross this extremely busy road safely. And by the way, it's not in the daytime when you have the big, long traffic jams. It's in the afternoon, the evenings. People are just flying through the town. So there's quite a few residents living in the town, visitors and shoppers trying to cross the road. So there was a need for some kind of an action. Anyway, nobody knew about this. It just landed on top of us. There was no consultations with us locally. They were put on, and as I say, as they're called, high visibility crossings, and they couldn't be any further from that. You're literally on top of them or even past them before you realise. So we have been lobbying now since the last year and a half. Now, I've just checked again recently there with the TII and the council, nobody's been knocked down at these crossings. There has been a number of incidents near hand or between the crossings because, unfortunately, even with the crossings, people are still crossing the road, even looking at their phones, walking across, and there's near accidents and accidents. But nevertheless, that's still not what these were about. But eventually now, what they've said is short term, they are going to put up the signs. We have the signs in the council office that were ordered a long time ago. But this is the TII basically is dictating that. The council can only do what they're told.
So I think the most controversial one is the one at the Bank of Ireland there at that junction. Yes. I try and let people across. You stop on one side of the box and then someone pulls out of the car park and someone's coming in from the Glenties Road. It's just an absolute nightmare. It seems to be in some provision for moving it from there.
Well, as I say, the short term is to put up the signs immediately and to redo all the zebra markings that are on the road. The long term now, they're going to go to redesign, and they're also going to go to public consultation, which is very important. But in that plan is to move the one from Bank of Ireland further down into the town, and that's part of the plan. And also the crossings that there are going to be redone. They're going to be raised up so that it can be quite obvious that you're coming on it or where to cross and everything else. It'll be quite visible when they're raised. And plus, which is a big bone of contention, Ballybuffet and Stranorda for years, particularly in the evenings, is the lighting. They're going to review the lighting, put up extra lightings, particularly near these crossings. But the first work's going to be done, we're told, quarter one. The other work will be designed, public consultation, particularly with the residents and the businesses, because there is a possibility that they could lose some parking spaces on one or two of them, just to give them, to ensure
but
that...
Patrick, like when this was first being flagged, this was being described as experimental. And everyone thought, like, you know, what's going on here? There's been no consultation. This doesn't make any sense. What are they? Yeah. Even the road safety officer at the time had his concerns about them. And, you know, me personally as a motorist, whether I should express the views or not, I also couldn't understand the design of them. Now, a year and a half on, only by the grace of God, it would seem, there has been no serious incident there. But clearly the TAI have looked at it and said, we've made a mistake here. Now, it's not being framed as such, but they're throwing out these plans and then coming in with what should have been put there in the first place. So really, the people of Ballybuffet and Stranoller were used as guinea pigs by the TAI. And as I say, it's only pure luck that someone wasn't crippled or killed.
Yeah, I agree. They're just, you could not see them. And I have spoken to several councillors from the other, from the south of the county there, Tom Conlon and Barry and a few other, and they've told me too, they've been driving through and they just weren't fully aware. A lot of people, to be honest with you, nobody at all was happy, considering that in Limerick and Dublin, where the other two pilot schemes were done, they actually put up signs and they're actually on the outskirts of the of these cities and towns. Ours was in the town centre and you simply could not see it. But look, I welcome the fact that nobody's been hurt. I welcome the fact that we're going to get some kind of crossings there, because the as the minister himself said the last day and last Friday in Lifford, you know, you have to start paying more attention to the people that are living in these towns as well. It's not all about town traffic, but in my opinion, yes, it was very, very badly handled. I've never known the TA or their previous name, the NRA, to be, you know, to bring in something like that, like so unexperimental and so dangerous.
Well, anyone who designed a crossing at effectively a four-lane junction with yellow boxes on both sides of the crossing needs to have their work reviewed. And I don't mean we don't know who it is, and I don't think it's anyone from within the county. So I'm not having to go at any individual. Yep. But I think anyone who stuck one of these crossings at effectively a quadruple junction with yellow boxes on either side of it needs to have the work reviewed, I think, because from the get go, that just didn't make sense.
I agree, and times I talk to road engineers in the county, and they just raise the eyes as well too, because they're driving through these junctions and these crossings and kept. But the Bank Ireland one was as an obvious wrong, and that will be put right. We've told that definitely is going to be moved, but it's going to go out, because when you move it down now in front of other business, they're going to lose parking and that. So I don't want to preempt where it's going to go, but it is going to be moved. We've told they're definitely going to move, but why it was put there in the first place, I just don't know. I just do not understand it.
So in the first instance, they're going to put signs up. And then, as you say, as the year progresses, they could be, they might have them raised, similar to what's in Letterkenny, I presume, but on the main street there, but with black and white crossings. Or maybe they might leave them the same way as Letterkenny has. They'll actually use paint that lights up at night, which is a remarkable turn of events, to actually have paint that illuminates with people's lights. Fantastic idea. Well done, TAI. And other measures so people can actually see them.
The lighting's a big thing. I get complaints all the time, both within Balbofane and Stour. The lights are so high, and when they change them from the orange glows to these white LED, there's a lot of black shadows in between the lights. And that's on, particularly at the crossings, they're going to review the lighting. That's been in within the contact we got back. Look, I know our senior engineers here in Donegal have been up and down to the TE all year long trying to get this sorted. And as recently there, as just before Christmas. So this is the news coming back now. We've got to go ahead now to start making changes and consult with residents and so on.
Okay, well, better late than never, I suppose. Thank you very much for your time, Patrick. I do appreciate you keeping us in the loop. All right, take care of yourself. That is Councillor. All right, bye-bye. That's Councillor Patrick McGowan there with an update on that situation. As I say, we're just lucky, I think, that someone wasn't seriously injured or killed there. And I wonder, is it completely the case that there was no collisions, no one hit by cars on those crossings? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Back after the news and the obituary notices.